I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. Welcome to the Daily Stoic Podcast, where each day we read a passage of ancient wisdom designed to help you in your everyday life. On Tuesdays, we take a closer look at these Stoic ideas, how we can apply them in our actual lives. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. The best time is now. Obviously, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The earlier you get started on something that takes time, the bigger and better the results will be. It would have been better then, of course, if you had tackled the changes you needed to make in your life in 2020 or 2021 or 2022. January 1st, 2023, it's come and gone. That would have been a great time to get started on new habits, to make new changes. It was a new year, a chance for a new you, a fresh moment, fresh calendar. But all those moments are gone, just as your chance to plant that tree 2 decades ago is gone. Missed opportunities, they belong to death, as Seneca once said about the days that pass us by. They are gone, never to return. And that's sad. But as the second half of that expression about trees goes, the next best time is now. Today, now is an opportunity to start. This is what you deserve, Marcus Aurelius wrote. You could be good today, but instead you choose tomorrow. But no, don't choose tomorrow. Choose to be good today. Adopt the mindset of the great Stephen Pressfield, who writes in his book, Put Your Ass Where Your Heart Wants to Be. Here is my frame of mind as I sit down to work. This is the day. There is no other day. This is the day. Don't wait for the bus to come around next year. Don't tell yourself you'll do it later. This is the day. Now is now. Now is the best time to start being the person you want to be, which is actually why we're relaunching today. It's your chance today, the New Year, New You Challenge. Typically, we do it live the first 21 days of the year, but we've actually found that most people abandon their New Year's resolutions by the 21st of the year. So maybe that's you. Maybe you fell short. Maybe you delayed. Maybe you didn't even get started, but now is the time. We heard from a bunch of people, they came back from vacation late, they procrastinated, they changed their minds. They asked if we could bring it back or give them a second go at it, and that's what we're doing. Today is the day. It starts today. It's your last chance to sign up. Sign up now, dailystoic.com/challenge. You'll see me in there. I'm already riding on a lot of the changes I made from starting the challenge a little earlier than you, but I'd love to see you in there. Join us with this awesome new cohort in the Daily Stoic New Year, New You Challenge. It would have been better if you started at the first of the year, but today's not too bad either.
You're not going to get better by doing things that are easy. I want to take the hard way. That's when you really build that character. That's when you become resilient.
There's almost no elite performer that doesn't also have some sort of physical practice. Wherever I go, I'm always looking for the practices or habits that allow people to be great at what they do. Like I was saying, they almost always have a physical practice, like whether it's a meditation practice or a weightlifting practice, whether it's stand-up paddleboarding or distance running, there's some physical thing that they do that they bring back to their work. And that's what I want to share with you today, some secrets from top performers that allows them to do what they do.
What we're capable of is way more than we think. Why I'm in this sport and why I keep signing up for these really, really long races is that I want to see what's possible physically and mentally. What are we capable of? I call it my pain cave, and I'm trying to make it bigger. So I'm hoping that this ceiling or back of my cave can be made bigger if I just keep on going into it and trying to do something a little bit harder or push a little farther than I've ever gone before. And I'm really visual, so when it gets to be that state when I'm running, I'll actually picture the cave holding like a chisel and a hard hat and just like getting to work on making it bigger.
So you don't even think about it as you're exploring the cave, you're expanding the cave. So it's more of a mine than a cave. And you're trying to go further deep into the bedrock.
You know, in high school, 10 miles was like our long run and we would be knocked out for days after. Then as you know, you keep going in, that distance, that number keeps growing and your ability to go deeper into the cave gets a little bit bigger.
I guess it's the tricky part of distance running, not to say that Usain Bolt is not also cerebral, but like in a 9-second race, you're not reaching into any file cabinets. It's like hitting a baseball. You're just like, see, hit. So much of what's happening is deeply in the subconscious, like in the muscle memory. Whereas in a 42-hour race, that's a lot of time inside your head.
For sure, it can be both. And that's where like your brain and your thoughts become so important. In those many, many hours of thinking, if you're continually letting your thoughts travel down a negative path, it's going to feed back into like what your body is able to give you and how it goes out there. If you keep telling yourself that you're awful and this problem that's happening is ruining your race and, you know, you shouldn't make it to the finish line, the odds are getting smaller and smaller as the hours pass that you're actually going to make it to that finish line.
Personally, I have never lacked the discipline aspect. I remember my parents being like, it's okay to let up. It's okay to, you know, not play by the rules. While self-discipline is fantastic in so many regards, I think in a lot of ways, it also can create kind of a very rigid box.
It's like, I think the number one cause of injury in athletes is overtraining. Like most people suffer from a lack of discipline, but at the elite level, it's the excess of discipline that can get you into trouble. And that's where moderation comes in.
I always say my coach is there to dial me back, to prevent me from going, and as opposed to like pushing you, being like, come on, you need to get moving, you need to run more. So he's like, no, maybe you should take some rest right now. Because I think for many high achievers, also the idea of rest is something that is so like antithetical to everything that we believe in. I think that rest for an athlete is one of the hardest things that we have to do. I take a rest day every week, and it's always my least favorite day, because for me, that is harder than going out and running, you know, 10 miles or something like that.
It's almost frowned upon to start something and not finish it. You're called a quitter. So I think that misconception that quitting makes you a failure or that quitting is bad is something that prevents a lot of people from finding what that true calling for them is.
I had Kate Fagan on the podcast, who wrote this amazing book called What Makes Maddie Run, about this collegiate runner who ended up committing suicide. The tragedy of the book, I felt when I was reading it, was this girl is super talented, I think running Division I cross country, and she hates it. Like, she hates the program. She hates her life. She hates what it's doing to her body. She's clearly depressed. It's almost like the part of her that was such a good athlete made it impossible for her to be like, I don't have to keep doing this. Maybe quitting is a problem for 90% of the population, but for like elite performers, quitting is really hard because part of what makes you great is that you're not a quitter.
I relate a lot to that sentiment, especially in my powerlifting career towards the end. My entire business that I've built was surrounding my powerlifting career. Everything kind of surrounds and follows that journey into powerlifting and what that means to me. And I felt sort of that a responsibility to keep going, even though after 2 or 3 years, I hated it. I didn't like going to the gym. It felt like a chore. It felt like a job that I didn't want to do. It's important to make the distinction. Am I quitting or am I not doing this because I have my big toenail is bugging me a little bit? Or is it something more serious that I really need to listen to my body about?
to me, confidence is not just, oh, I believe in myself. Confidence to me is a knowledge of what one is capable of doing. And that is different to me than just faith, which one might take without evidence. But I've also seen the demonstrable evidence of what I'm capable of. How does one go about cultivating this confident mind that you're talking about?
Three ways you can think about it. I've got to start looking for memories from my past of quality effort, little tiny successes here and there, and some indicators of progress. I've got to start being somewhat more selective about how I think about my past, both long-term and short-term in terms of yesterday. And maybe I need to be very selective in terms of how I think about basically the last hour of my life. When I was in physical geography class just now, what did I do right in that class? I want to take that memory with me into the future. You mentioned Eli Manning in the fourth quarter. Let's go back to the 2012 Super Bowl. And there he is, 3 minutes to go on the clock. They're down by 5 points. They got to score a touchdown. And so Manning takes the snap in the fourth quarter, throws this beautiful 40-yard rainbow right into his receiver's hands, despite the fact that that receiver was covered pretty darn well. That play of the game set up the Giants winning touchdown. 2 days later, Manning is on a nationally syndicated radio show. Commentator says, do you ever think about the ramifications of failure at moments like that? And very politely, Eli Manning says, no, that's exactly what you don't do. Right. You think about all the times you got it right. That's the feeling that you keep. He was pretty good at doing that. The first real class of activities in terms of cultivating confidence is to be very selective about bringing in constructive memories from your past. The second class of activities is being really careful about the stories that you tell yourself about yourself in the present. What are the underlying stories that you tell yourself? Oh, I'm good at this. Oh, I'm not good at that. Oh, I hate doing this. Oh, I love doing that. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, that every one of those expressions is basically a belief about yourself. The kid who says, oh, I'm not good at math. Okay, well, maybe up to this point, that could be true. But going forward from this moment, as long as you maintain that belief, I'm not good at math, that belief is now a causal factor in your future experience. One of the things that we have to do is come to grips with the various self-fulfilling prophecies that we're all laboring under. The third class of activities is, of course, how you think about yourself in the future. What are the still photos of various futures that your imagination is feeding you? What are the video clips of various future scenarios that sophisticated video production studio in your imagination is feeding you? Why don't we become the director of those short movies, of a whole bunch of scenarios that filled us with a sense of energy and optimism and enthusiasm? Once we start working on our minds in all three of those levels, we are developing, as I put it in the book, a mental bank account, which leads to that sense of certainty that we want.
So the other thing the Stoics talk about, and they tended to use boxing more as the analogy, but I think they also use like lifting heavy things, which is this idea that life throws obstacles or difficulties at us, just like in the boxing ring or on the wrestling mat, you're paired with a sparring partner. And Epictetus says, like, you shouldn't bemoan the fact that it's hard. You should say, this is how you become world class. Or he says, this is how you become Olympic class material. It's by having strong sparring partners. So how do you think about maybe this injury that you're going through, or just the difficulties you've gone through as your career? Has that made you a more resilient athlete?
Oh, no, I totally think so. It's kind of one of those things that, like, you're not going to get better by doing things that are easy. Like, I want to take the hard way. That's when you really build that character. That's when you become resilient, is going through tough times. I dislocated my elbow on the world stage, and like a lot of people may think it would be really easy for me to just, I've done 7 times at the games, that's good. But instead, I'm so excited to get back there because I know that I'm going to be better than I ever was. Just kind of taking those hard circumstances and flipping them into a positive, to where I'm going to use this to make me the best athlete that I've ever been.
When you see the Jordan, the Tom Brady, you see a certain level of calmness too. The way I put the word on it, everything we talk about, you're focused, you're present. To me, being present is being extremely calm. When you stay calm and you have a nice routine, you don't have to go find success. Success will come find you. It will land right on top of you. I guess in acting, they call it trying to catch a feather. It's like if you go chase it, it'll go away
yeah.
from you.
Yeah.
But if you just sit there still and let it come, it'll come to you.
Well, and that's why I think ego is so dangerous, because I would say ego is not calm and not confident.
Yes.
Right? Ego is this, like, people think it looks like confidence, and maybe it looks like confidence on the outside, but inside, it's like fundamentally insecure. It's sensitive to slights. You know, like a duck, it's like sitting on the water. It looks calm, but it's like furiously paddling. That's what ego is to me. And so you push that ego away and you actually get to a place of calmness and confidence, because you're like, I've done the work. And I also know that if I don't calm down and get control of myself, I won't be able to access or use the training and the skills that I have as effectively.
I was at Cal Berkeley when I was playing football, and one of our defensive players came in at halftime, and this dude was yelling and screaming and going nuts. And he went out there and played the worst half of his life.
Think about, why do players talk trash? It's to make the other player angry.
Yeah.
And then you know they're not going to be as good. And then we do that to ourselves all the time, right? Like, we know that anger in other people distracts them, pisses them off, overwhelms them, gets them into trouble. But with me, my anger is good fuel. And it's like, no, it's not.
No,
not
it's
at
not.
All.
Keep the main thing the main thing. What does that mean, and how do you guys actually apply that?
So number one would be, if we all come in to help the Rams improve at football, what that leads to, what we're hoping is, right, some version of a Jim Collins flywheel effect, a snowball effect, where we just keep rolling the snow and the ball gets bigger and bigger and bigger. In the entertainment business, the neat thing is, what keeps professional sports rolling is maybe the drama that takes place in between the games, whether one person likes this color and the other person likes that color, one person voted for this politician, the other. That's not the main thing.
Is it like that the organization has the main thing of, like, get better at football, and then does each subsequent person have their own main thing?
Everyone has a specific role. They know that role. They understand that role. And it can also help individuals determine, wait a minute, this isn't a role that truly fulfills me, so maybe I better go look somewhere else.
I had the mantra one season that good is the enemy of great. Like, everything I do every day, I have to be great. I have to be worthy of that next moment. When really my new one is, perfection is the enemy of good. When you try too hard to have that moment every single day, you actually rob yourself of that kind of synchronicity that happens when it does all come together. And when you have been, like, toiling and working and just focusing on that process, and also adapting to what's happening in the world, which might be, yeah, having a few weeks where you feel off. For me, I was just sick and had to take an extra week off the bike. Mm. Those things happen, and it's not going to be perfect. But oftentimes in my career, when I really analyze what's happened in those kind of, like, big, amazing moments, there will often be a few things that I look back on, like 2018, when I won the world championship. I actually hurt my knee in June and I took 2 weeks off. At that moment of winning worlds, I said, man, I'm so glad I hurt myself. I had this break. I ended the season so energized. But in the moment, it felt like my career was ending. Having that kind of long view and trusting that process is so much easier said than done, but it is really kind of the crux of making those moments possible. Most highly talented people were talented at a young age. They had some proclivity at a young age. I'm talking more about the sport world than business.
Sure.
And as a young age, what most people do is that they're supposed to form their identity. But if the identity is almost infused with the thing that you do, then your identity is mapped to your outcomes.
Sure.
And you have this below the conscious surface that I am what I do. And I think a big part of my work in high performing environments is to help people. This is like, decouple who you are from what you do. And it's so intertwined. That's why the fight, flight, freeze mechanisms are on full tilt for people prior to walking on stage or prior to getting on the mound. Those true brain mechanisms that are responsible for survival are on point when there's nothing of real threat, physical threat. The only thing on threat, whether you're on the mound or on the stage, is other people's opinions. It's not that you don't identify with what you do, but your identity is not just that. When you pull apart what you do from who you are, the work is to say, well, who am I independent of what I do? It's that part of you that's the same as when you're 30, that you were 3 or 13, you know, like, who am I? And then the thing that I do ends up becoming the way I'm expressing my craft and expressing my philosophy and expressing my psychology. There is a difference between the brain and the mind. The brain is like the hardware in a computer, and the mind is like the software.
that runs the hardware. It doesn't quite hold up when you really pull on the science of it, but it is interesting to think about, like, okay, you were born with some hardware, but who trained, who programmed your software?
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.